Welcome to the Agile Wire, brought to you by Wisconsin Agility. We want you to get agile and stay agile. Now here are your hosts, Jeff Bubbles and Chad Beyer.
And we're recording. All right, kick us off, Jeff.
All right, we have Nate Amadon joining us on the podcast. So Nate, we met you on Scrum Match. And we thought, you've got a really unique story and you got a unique thing that you're doing in the Agile community. So maybe you could just give our listeners a little background about where you came from and what you're doing right now and how you're like incorporating your military experience into this Agile world.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks so much for having me on. This is super cool. So I've got a different background than most people in the Agile world, right? I grew up in the Air Force as an Air Force pilot. So I flew C-17s, which is a very large cargo aircraft. And I did that for about 12 years on active duty, and I'm still in the reserves actually part-time. So I'll still go down and fly on base on occasion. So when I got out of active duty, I decided, look, I'm just going to try to find a job somewhere. And I ended up falling into project management and then into software development teams. And when I got in, I realized, look, there wasn't anything that I was really missing from an experience level, right? My skill set and the skills I learned in the military as a pilot and as an officer really helped me be prepared to do the Agile Scrum or to operate in that world. It felt like how we operated in the military, right? So I really fell in love with it. I got all the certs, tried to learn as much as possible. And then I tried to start getting some of my friends hired. I was like, look, I mean, there's these other people getting out of the military that have the exact same experience and skill set. And it was hard to get them hired because, you know, on paper, it didn't look like they had the right experience. But in reality, I think they have better experience in some aspects for sure. So, long story short, I've been doing Agile delivery for about 8 or 9 years. And then about 7 years ago, we started a consulting firm that basically tries to match this gap in leadership execution at the team level on Agile Scrum teams and software development organizations. And this pool of kind of untapped talent coming out of the military, people that have had leadership experience, that know how to do some of the things that are really valuable for software teams. So I started Form 100 Consulting, and we've been working with clients to do that. So we provide contract staffing positions for like scrum masters and product owners, and then we'll do agile coaching and really help enterprise organizations get aligned and deliver more value.
Awesome. And remind me, the Form 100 name.
Yeah.
What is the story behind that again?
Yeah. So, naming a company is tough.
Let's go ahead and say that.
We were kind of bouncing around some different ideas and really, a Form 100 in the Air Force is actually a form that you'll sign to request to leave active duty. And so that's kind of the tie-in for it. That's really where the name came from.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So it's fun. So we mentioned that we sort of crossed paths because of this Scrum Match platform that Jeff and I are involved with. And obviously listeners probably are aware of that. We've talked about it before. But we have a question we like to ask Scrum Masters from time to time. Like, how did you get into this whole like Scrum Master thing? Because, you know, very few people are like, hey, you know, Johnny, what do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, you know, I want to be a Scrum Master. Like, it's still this very niche thing, this whole Agile stuff. I mean, it's become much more ubiquitous now, right? As we're well into, you know, 2024, I guess it is. But like, how did you get involved? And I mean, we've talked about this kind of before we started the recording, but like, what are the parallels to serving in the military? And obviously, you know, the Scrum Master and many people in the Agile space serving as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, right? I never thought as a as a pilot in the Air Force that I would be a scrum master, right? I mean, I didn't know that that existed, right? It sounds weird. When I go back to my unit, everyone in my unit flies for the airlines, basically. And they're like, well, you're a scrum master? So having to explain that is tough. You know, I gravitated towards the software development world. And I think a lot of it was just because, you know, in these large, especially in large enterprise organizations, there's just a lot of bureaucracy. And when you get to in the traditional project management realm, there's a lot of talking about things, but not a lot of executing. And I, you know, spent my whole career in really executing missions. And so when I saw software, like the agile teams, the scrum teams that were working, I was like, okay, they just want to get stuff done. And we want to deliver and get things done. So I gravitated to that space. And then, you know, when I started to look at what the different positions were, you know, Scrum Master really, really aligned well with what I did in the military, right? The servant leader aspect of it, right? You know, as an officer, you're not necessarily always, you're not doing the work sometimes, right? I might get in trouble for saying that, right? My peers, but, you know, the senior NCOs, for example, so in the military, you have an enlisted track and an officer track. And I remember when you tell senior, if you call a senior NCO like sir, they'd be like, don't call me sir, I work for a living, right? And it's sort of true, because in the officer world, you really are there to serve your people, right? You're there for the care and feeding of the troops, okay? And to set the direction and help improve things so they can do the job better. And so that's really what a scrum master does, right? And, you know, as an officer, I spent a lot of time doing, you know, mission briefings, and a lot of times doing retrospectives and debriefs, and a lot of time thinking about, like, how is this process working, and making sure that in the C-17, as an aircraft commander, I'd have a crew of 5 or 7 people, and we'd go on a mission, and it was my job to make sure we communicated effectively, that everyone was aligned with what we were doing and how we worked our processes. And so really all of those positions, like all of that skill set, aligned with the scrum master position. And so I found it really rewarding, because I was able to take that skill set and apply it to software development. Now, obviously software development is different than flying a plane, but not,
I mean,
that different.
You had a defined time box, right? Like, you're going to take off and you're going to land at some point, and so that's your sprint length, you know, like it's going to happen.
It's, I'd say that all the time, right? I would say, like, we had a very, very strict time box, okay? Because, like, it's going to end, right? And so we didn't have the luxury of not making decisions a lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, like, just the sense and respond, and you're going to run into impediments. Things are going to go wrong. Like, you have to be able to react in the moment, I'm sure, right? To high stakes situations.
Yeah. And then, you know, even, so some of the other things I'll say when I draw this parallel is a lot of times I would take a crew of 5 to 7 and be like, hey, you're going on a 2-week mission. Here's generally where you're going. Right? And I would plan out the first leg of the trip pretty, you know, in more detail. But in 3 days, I'm going to land in Tokyo. I'm not going to plan which approach, or, you know, I don't know what the weather's going to be. There's so many variables that I wouldn't spend a ton of time detail planning that. And so when we started talking about the idea of story points, or, you know, of generally not over planning, that fit really well with the experience in the military. And this is true across all, not just pilots, right? I mean, this is true across all of the different branches of the military, because, you know, we're very comfortable operating and making decisions when you don't have all the information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a gap I see in, especially in software, because you're really, you know, you're really in a complex or complicated domain.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's also my past, right, is what drove me away from project management. The traditional approach is like, everybody's just, you're marching forward, going through these phase gates. And I always felt like it was a disaster from the beginning. And it's like, why are we doing this? Right. And then I felt like the crazy person running around the organization. Like, is anyone's eyes, like, open your eyes. Like, every project we start is red from the beginning. We're fooling ourselves here. So it, because right. again, there's just so many unknowns you're going to encounter, yeah. or uncover, encounter.
Yeah.
So I'm also curious. This one thing sure. that intrigued us when we first met, the three of us, we were in a, you know, on a call like this, I guess, just not recording. And we sort of, at one moment, Jeff and I can't remember if we vocalized it out loud or we just sort of like, we might have even like typed it in a message to each other, but we were just like, man, it's so fun to talk to other owners because you yeah. just had this like, you just had that owner mentality. Like we could tell before I guess we probably knew at that point in the conversation that you were, you know, the owner of Form 100 Consulting, mm-hmm. but like, you know, we always tried to fake ownership, like before when we were working at a previous consultancy and like treat it like it's your own money and all, you know, but you yeah. can't, like, there's no replacement for when you actually like quit your job and you're out in the wild fighting for your next meal. Like it. And so anyway, like, I know we're talking about like product, you know, Scrum or Agile stuff. And obviously you work in the product ownership space as well, but like, any other parallels you would draw, like, you know, like how you got to the owner mentality, the cutthroat way you talk through some topics, I guess.
Yeah. So, I mean, I agree. Right. I mean, there's a different perspective when, you know, it's on you, I guess is the way to say it. Not in the military from a financial standpoint, you're essentially taken care of. Right. I mean, you know, you're going to get paid. You know, you stay in 20, you'll get a pension, your healthcare is taken care of. But one of the reasons why I think that this model works where you find people that have military leadership experience is because in a different way, you're comfortable taking that ownership, right? You know, I remember the first time I became an aircraft commander. So I was in charge of the plane and we had to go on a mission. And we would bring passengers and you would see, you know, families walking on the plane and you kind of had that realization. You're like, oh, like it's on me 100%. Right. And that's not something that you typically will get in the private sector. Right. And so whether you're a senior NCO or an officer, at some point you get dropped into a process, into a shop, into a unit and like, it's on you. Okay. And so, you know, that how you handle that is different, right? I mean, you fail along the way. The first time that you have that kind of like ownership realization, it takes some trial and error. You're going to do things wrong. And so one of the value propositions we bring is that, look, people have gone through that already, right? In some regards. And so, so I would say the parallels is, in the military is that you just have experience and training. Right, and mentorship around how to do this, how to lead, whether it's an organization or your own firm, or whether it's a process or a team. So we really talk a lot about extreme ownership and that mentality, which is, look, everything in some regards is your fault. And if you approach it that way, then if you can build a team culture on a Scrum team to approach it that way, then you build psychological safety, right? Then you start to say, look, I messed this up. And they'll be like, you know, you have a constant drive to improve all the time. Because there's no blaming of it. I'll sometimes say there's no crying in software. All right. Like we just figure it out and go to the next thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, but I agree. There is a different.
How do you go about instilling that extreme different. Ownership in others that maybe don't have that military background where maybe that's more prevalent?
Yeah, so we have the luxury of hiring people that already have that, right? And we continually reinforce it. So when I'm on teams trying to build a team of a team version of extreme ownership, it's really leading by example. So if you're on you're a Scrum Master on a team, one of the things I'll teach people in our organization is. You're doing a retrospective or you're having a debrief or something, you know, it's a good idea to be the first one to talk about what you did wrong. Okay. Cause initially everyone's very guarded. No one wants to admit that they messed up. But you know, when you're trying to when you're trying to share that with other people in a team, like being the first one out there to say, oh man, I messed this up. Here's how I screwed up. Right. And that almost gives permission to the team to start to share more, be more vulnerable in the space.
All right, Nate. So I know you work in a lot of large organizations, and there can be, you know, quite a bit of bureaucracy when you have big organizations. Like, how do you navigate that and really make, you know, big change happen and change the way people are working when they're so maybe ingrained in the way things have always been done?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Agile, what I found, and maybe you can get your guys' take on this, the pure Agile, the pure Scrum, it's really easy if you're a team of four or five people in a garage building the next, like, Uber for lawnmowers, right? I mean, that is going to make it, it's just naturally how you're going to operate. But when you start getting into these very large 50, 100-year-old organizations that are very project-based, there's a whole slew of new constraints that you have. Right. You think about like project-based funding, right? You got matrix organizations with different managers everywhere. These applications are large. They're very integrated. Okay. It's hard to have separate teams, release gates, you have QA processes, tons of documentation. Operating in like a pure agile way becomes just harder. Okay. So we'll sometimes talk about this thing like a sliding scale of agility. Okay. Where if like, there's just going to be constraints that you have, and there's certain areas where you might not be able to fix that constraint. Okay? And you have to accept that as when you go into these organizations. And really the goal is to just continually improve. So we don't talk about implementing like a dogmatic pure agile. We talk about pushing people on the scale of agility. Right. And the other thing I'll say from a military perspective is like the military is probably the biggest bureaucracy ever. Like there's so many regulations out there, right? And it just gets bloated. But as an officer in the military, you have to navigate that to still get the mission done. Okay. And so there's some things that we know how to do. And it's not necessarily all command and control. It's very relationship based, right? As an officer, I would know who to make friends with so I could get things done. That's super valuable in these large organizations, right? If you're good buddies with the database team, you can get things through faster, right? You can increase communication. When you go into these large organizations, you see it's pretty wild how much communication and personal skills and building relationships, right, is how you facilitate actually getting value through the system and changing processes, right? Because a lot of people aren't incentivized. And as coming in as a consultant, we don't have any authority, right? So we have to build influence without authority.
Yep.
And in the military, a lot of times that happens too, right? You'll be outranked or you'll be in a different chain of command as someone. And so how to navigate that, I find to be, something that military officers are very, or military leaders are very experienced at doing. And that's how you can really drive incremental change.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's additive.
Yeah. We, so, you know, the community talks about stakeholder management often, like, from a product owner standpoint. And Chad and I always talk about a stakeholder engagement. So it's more about engaging the stake more into relationships, kind of like what you talked about. And I think that's just, it's just a better approach. And I think the other thing that you talked about there, that you talked about what rule, like there's tons of rules and things that get in your way, but there's ways to navigate around them. You don't have to follow every rule, every situation. You have to understand the intent. And I think people in the military are really good at that. Like they can read between the lines and understand intent, and know when they can bend rules or break them depending on your perspective.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that's a great point. First, like, I guess I've never thought of, I always say stakeholder management too, but it sounds weird.
You're not really managing or controlling your stakeholders. You're really just trying to engage them and involve them and build relationships with them. Right. So that you can say no to them or not right now, or how can we do this together and collaborate with them? Right.
Yeah. I mean, when, When we go into a new organization, the first thing we do is map the airspace. That's what we call it. Okay, so we have to know, you have to know the soup you're swimming in. And so first you have to understand who the stakeholders are, right? And then you have to start building relationships with them. And I always tell people, and we just kind of naturally do this, we spend more time building the relationship than asking or trying to change things. Because yep. you can do that on the back end, but if they don't trust you or like you, or, you know, I mean, some of these teams have been working together for 10, 15 years, and you're a new, you know, let's say contract scrum master coming in, you know, they initially don't think you're going to be good at this, right? They think you're going to make the world, they're going to make their world worse. So our goal is to let them know we're here to help and build that relationship first. And then to your rules, the rules regulation piece. I mean, I think that's so important, because in the military you can't follow every rule, right? And so I think as leaders you're required to, I always took the approach that, you know, I'm a leader in this organization, the military, and you know, you're trusting me to determine when rules or regulations can be followed and not, and it can depend on the situation, right? And so that takes judgment.
Yep. Yeah. I love that, mapping the airspace, and what you said earlier about, you know, just the bureaucracy and politics inside an organization. I think we mentioned to you, like we partner, with Craig Larman and do some less training courses. And So we've attended a lot of classes with Craig Larman at this point. Like I joke that I'm like, I'm either really into the subject matter or I'm a really terrible student and I just have to keep going back. But Craig talks about, you know, people always say change is hard, and I've always hated that phrase. And Craig talks about it similar, like change isn't hard. Like you're just trying to change hearts and minds. And if you try to change hearts and minds, you might not get that far. But if you start looking about organizational structure and thinking about, well, what do we need to tweak to actually make the real change happen. Mm-hmm. And he also has this phrase that he talks about, be a politician. And a newish, or I'm not even going to label them, some scrum masters I hear, or some change agents, they throw their hands up and they'll vent to you and they'll say, we just don't have buy-in in this organization to make the change happen. Yeah. And I always scratch my head. It's like, no, this is the game we're playing. Like, you have to be a politician, map the airspace, figure mm-hmm. out what rules you can probably break, which rules you can challenge, which rules might have you exited from the organization, right? But don't let that one like win out, right? People who aren't good at change, they walk around in fear of breaking the rules and challenging the status quo. And mm-hmm. I guess I've always been a boat rocker in organizations. So like on day one, I'm not thinking necessarily about like, what do I need to do to follow the rules? I'm thinking like, what can I do here to make some change happen? And I just did it organically in the past, but I don't know. Do you find that, have you seen that similar thing where some people, it's like they're waiting for the buy-in and it's like, no, you have to work hard to navigate the organization, but it doesn't mean that the change is necessarily hard. It's just, that's the game we're playing.
Oh my gosh. I love this topic. there's so many things that are like streaming in my brain right now. The first one I'll say though is, I like this phrase that I've used, with flying and teaching, which is slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And I think for change management, that's the game. Okay. And so to your point, I mean, I've worked with, you know, tons of experienced scrum masters, let's say, that have come into organizations that I'm in. And they usually what happens is they come in without building any relationships, without actually understanding how things work and the reason why fences were put up in the first place, so that you have to figure out the why behind things before you're going to actually try to change them. And then they come in guns blazing to try to reshape the org to agile theory land, and they end up just getting crushed, you know, and then they throw their hands up and And then, you know, and then they, you know, a lot of times will burn out. And so a lot of it comes back to the extreme ownership piece too. And that's where I try to direct that conversation, which is, yeah, okay, so there's all these constraints in this large bureaucratic organization, and there's a lot of, you know, people that are worried about their orgs and their career, and they're worried about getting promoted. And so there's all these dynamics at play. And so the question is like, what can you do better to make it, you know? So if you need a process changed, like the person in charge of that process or the one that's holding the line on that process, you need to figure out like, what do they care about? Like, what incentivizes them to do it? Okay. And then how can I present a business case that aligns to their incentives, right? And maybe it's just building a relationship and they like you and they're friends with you and they'll just do it to help you out. Or maybe it's because, you know, you're like, here's the path of why this helps and here's what it will provide to the organization. It'll make, and in some cases, if they're interested in being promoted, it'll be like, you know, this is how it'll make you look better, right? And so you, I think it's not that these people need to change. It's like, how can I provide them the right information? Okay. I do this a lot in the leaders as well. I think that people in leadership positions in an organization got there for a reason. They're generally smart, okay? And if they're making the wrong decisions, you're not providing them the right information so they understand it well enough. And so that we talked about extreme ownership, like that's the mindset you want to take going in. Is like, okay, our team isn't doing a great job of communicating effectively why this isn't a suboptimal decision.
The more mature people that are Scrum Masters, like that we found on Scrum Match, are the ones that can change their approach and their explanation of a why behind something, depending on the audience and then the situation we put them in. Kind of similar to what you were saying there. Like you don't give the same explanation to a CIO that you give to a, you know, a team member that's also a collaborating developer, right, with you. Like they want different things, and so like, but they both. The same, the answer can be the same for both of them, but it's the way you say it has to be different because they're after different things. So I love that, because like, meet people where they are and what do they want and help them understand the whys. You know, a lot of times just it's really about really making the hidden visible and helping them to understand how we all win through this change, right? Whatever that change might be.
I mean, we talk a lot about lowering the water level so you can see the rocks. I think that one's like a good analogy I like to use. But yeah, I mean, to your point, it depends on who you're talking to, right? You know, tech debt is one that comes up a lot, right? You'll have a team that's, hey, we need to, you know, refactor this service because it's just really painful delivering with it. And so then they pitch it, you know, to say the product stream. They're not engineers, okay? They don't understand that pain point, right? But is there like, can you, if you fix this, will you reduce, you know, will you reduce catastrophic bugs that could come up in the application? Or if you reduce this, will you be able to develop twice as fast when it comes to new features? Like you have to change the approach, right? To align incentives, right? And then I would get back to the military leadership piece. I mean, that's what you have to do both. And I would say both externally to stakeholders and to leaders, but also internally to your team, right? You have to understand and explain the why you're doing things. You have to get people on board, right? The military isn't an order follow organization. I'm sure you've probably heard this before, but yeah, I mean, I don't think I've ever really ordered anyone to do anything in my 20-year career.
So tell me more about that. What, because that's probably a perception that a lot of people have. Like people just follow orders and they're just used to this command and control thing. Like, what do you mean by that? So you've never given an order. Like, what is that? What have you done? Like,
Well, I mean, I don't know about never. I guess I wouldn't say never, but if I have to, I feel like I failed, maybe is the way to put it.
okay.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a book that a Navy commander wrote, Turn the Ship Around. It's pretty popular. Yeah, that I think is the right essence of what we're talking about here. Yeah, I think my job as a military officer leader is to care and feed for the troops, provide the right direction, and give them autonomy on how to do things, and maybe not even how to do things, but what to do and why we're doing it. Okay, like what's the end game, and let them figure out the how. And build the relationships, and then ask, right? Like, not, I guess generally that ask comes with like some legal authority behind it, right? If I'm the commander of an aircraft and I ask someone to do something, like, I built a culture on my crews where that I would have a lot, you know, very junior enlisted people that just showed up in the military and be like, well, that's stupid, we shouldn't do that. And sometimes they're right. And so when you talk about psychological safety piece, you know, that becomes super important in the military unit, and definitely on a software team, right? Because if you shut down their ability to say something, if they're like, what you're doing is stupid, they'll let you do it, right? And even if it's dangerous, like that mental block is really strong. like they will, you know, I remember being on other crews and just are talking to other people, and they'd be like, we did this really dangerous thing on accident. And I was like, well, did you see it? And they were like, yeah, but you know, I wasn't going to tell him. Yeah. I mean, there's some actual like airline disasters where people crashed the whole plane because they wouldn't speak up, you know? And so, but when you think about that on the software team, right, the new developer coming in is going to see something that you didn't see, it, and they could save, you know, a catastrophe for the team or the application, right, or for the organization.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that turned the ship around, the intent-based leadership too. It's funny because like as I've gotten older and farther into this, I've backed into what I kind of used to be like and do, like, because imagine me as a younger person, but still like really fired up when I'm thrown into like this bureaucratic Fortune 500 organization. I managed change a little differently, and I was probably a little more, I bet I was a bit more abrasive in my approach in the past. Yeah. But I'm reminded of a manager I used to have, and he would say, I think initially I would bring him problem statements, and I'd go into his office, you know, the typical one-on-one meeting, and I'd go in and I'd gripe and complain and vent and tell him about the problems. And then eventually he said this comment to me, and I'm telling the story. It's a long time ago, so I'm just kind of getting the highlights here. But I think he said something along the lines of like, bring me solutions, not problems. So then I changed my approach, and it was a bit more closer to like the turn the ship around. Like I intend, then I started bringing solutions, but I was still asking permission. That was the next step. Like, hey, I'd like to, you know, I'm thinking about trying this. What do you think? And that would still kind of end up in like my idea would get shot down in the one-on-one. And so then eventually, I don't know, maybe it was just organically me figuring out how to navigate it. But I then started coming with, I intend to do this, or I've already done this. Like,
yeah.
And I'm letting you know about it. And that's when I think my manager probably, like, that's when I became a lot more difficult to manage, I guess, traditionally. But he gave me a lot of respect and support going forward. Because I think, and then future managers, I didn't have that many more managers after that point in my career, but future managers realized that pretty quickly with me. Like, I'm just going to tell you what I'm planning on doing. You're here to support me. And if you try to control me, it's just not going to work out very well, right? Which is probably why I've inevitably ended up quitting in my job and starting my own company, because I like ownership. And Jeff's my business partner, so he knows I'm a complete control freak. So we deal slightly. With it quite well, I think. But
anyway, you know,
you made me think of that with the turn the ship around.
No, I think it's a great, you know, a great analogy, right? Because you want to, especially in the consulting world, you want to figure out who the client is, okay, and what's the goal of the organization, and why are you brought in, and what's the value of the team, and why do they exist. And so from a military perspective, this could be like centralized command, decentralized execution, if you've heard that term before. Mm-hmm. But essentially, if you want to provide the right guidance and understand what the end goal is and why you're doing it, and then allow your team to make those decisions, make whether it's micro decisions or even larger decisions. This is why I think alignment's so important on software teams, because you know, if the engineers and the team doing the work understands the why, they understand the customer, they understand what we're doing, they can make architectural type decisions, you know, at a micro level that are going to be extremely valuable in the long run, right? And that becomes super additive. And, you know, when you talk about twice the work and half the time of Scrum type stuff, like that's really where it comes from, in my opinion. And so, yeah, but it's also important to build a relationship with your client, with your manager, that they know you understand why and what they want to have done, and you get the reason behind it. So when you build that trust, then you have more, you know, more rope to I guess to hang yourself in some regards, but essentially you have more leeway, right? I mean, you have so we talk a lot about like, hey, 80% solution fast, and I'd rather be action oriented than waiting, you know, waiting for permission.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
So this has been a great conversation, Nate. I guess at this time, is there anything you wanted to plug to our listeners or promote to them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're starting a business like you guys. And you know, I think that there is a real need for this skill set out there, right? This ability to manage in a bureaucracy, to lead teams, to organize and to really help teams deliver more value. And really there's a pain out there at the team level, right? I mean, I'm sure you've talked to people that are operating on a chaotic maybe or a dysfunctional type team, and it's not fun for them. And we can help bring that, we can help improve people's lives through our, you know, through our experience in the military as leaders, right? We can apply those skills to make things better. And that's really the why behind what we're doing. I mean, that's what gets me up in the morning, right? I mean, we try to make the world better in the software space. So, you know, if there are people listening to this that think that there's opportunities where we could come out and help, I would love to chat with them. You know, and if what I'll say a lot of times, if you're a leader of a software organization and you have this like, there's something wrong with my team, or I don't know what's going on, or I know they're doing work, but I'm not sure what. Okay, those are things that maybe we've heard before, right? Yeah, I'd you know, love to reach out. I mean, a lot of these organizations are already hiring contract Scrum Masters, contract product owners, contract TPMs. So why not have one that's you know, had experience leading teams on there?
Awesome. Thanks for the conversation. And I'm sure we'll chat more in the future beyond this recording.
Yeah, super fun. Thanks, guys.
If you found value in today's episode, share this with a friend. Until next time, get agile and stay agile.